Welcome to BA Brew. I'm Philippa.
I'm Mandy.
And I'm Jane.
Today we're going to be exploring the games people play at work. So most of us get along with our colleagues just fine. Until there's a problem. Maybe something's gone wrong in a change project, a senior stakeholder or a customer is really unhappy, and the blame game is in full swing. In these situations, we may find those rational adults that we call our colleagues starting to behave in strange ways. Maybe they become like a fractious toddler, or they decide to take charge and start ordering people around. So this is a frustrating but all too common pattern. And it can be explained by a model called transactional analysis, which dates back to the 1950s. It was developed by Eric Byrne, who explained, I think, why people tend to adopt these unhelpful behaviours in what he called trigger situations. And I'm sure our viewers will be familiar with the terms parent, adult, and child. Byrne called these ego states. And being an adult is obviously what we want to aim for most of the time. But when we're triggered, we can easily become that critical parent or that fractious child, the toddler having a tantrum. I'm wondering, Mandy, in your working life, both as an MD and a leadership development consultant, what your experience has been of these unhelpful ego states that people slip into?
Yes, well, you know, I think the kind of things that I'll observe right now are things that will be familiar to everyone. And these are really connected to roles of authority a lot of the time. So, for example, people who are in management roles are naturally inclined to have to set goals, help people work towards those targets. So for them, that door to becoming a critical parent is open wide. So if they don't have the skills, for example, to deliver good feedback in a way that can be understood and integrated by the staff member, then it can come across as particularly forceful and particularly critical. So that would be the one that I see the most, probably, is managers being perceived as being a critical parent telling people what to do.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'm sure, absolutely. Joe, you've worked in change for many years. What have you come across?
Oh, lots. But I'd say certainly from a learning environment, I think when it's not a kind of peer-to-peer, adult-to-adult kind of sharing type relationship and someone's coming into a learning environment and maybe learning in a way that they're not comfortable with or the learning style doesn't resonate with them, I think sometimes it can be seen as a sort of, you know, direct, you know, imparting knowledge, sharing knowledge, and people can't necessarily absorb information in the right way in that kind of child state. So I think certainly from a learning styles perspective, it plays into it as well. Not sure your reflections on that, Philippa, from a learning background as well.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, it kind of ties into the cycle people go through in the change curve, which we at Assist call the Sarah curve. And certainly in the early stages of change, where there's resistance, people can really kick against it. For example, I've experienced a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, a company that I was working for was growing. And on the upper floor of the office building, we had a few hundred people working there. The desks of one team had to be moved about 2 meters and re-angled to accommodate about 10 new desks. And I'm afraid there was massive trauma there. The whole team moved into a fractious child state. There was, folded arms, you know, passive aggressive behavior, and crying to the point where actually the manager, the team manager, asked people who were distraught by this time to leave early, go home, and just take some time, you know, to absorb the change. So I've seen it. So that's quite an extreme example, but I'm sure we've seen it. I think I'd agree with Mandy. The critical parent is the state that a lot of managers slip into whenever there's a problem, is to take charge. But that can have negative impacts on the team.
But your example also highlights something really important about everything we're going to talk about today. And that is the fact that this is really about dynamics, the hidden dynamic underneath the surface. And in that change scenario, when you're talking about a whole team, what you have there is an energy that builds, that's transferable to other people. And being in those nuances, when you get caught up in those states, this is the thing that we're going to take a closer look at in a few minutes, is how do you spot that this change, this nuanced emotional state is happening? And then how do you detach from that as well? But yeah, the dynamics are interesting.
And I think as a manager, you might become critical of the team, particularly if there's an issue, a customer's upset or a senior stakeholder's upset. But actually, sometimes if somebody's in a child mode, a child ego state, you might want to put your arm around them and say, oh, they're there, doesn't matter. You reassure them, but actually you're reinforcing them as a child. Joe, I don't know if you've come across that at all, where somebody's, you know, been behaving like, I don't know, they've slipped into a five-year-old mode, and your natural instinct as a parent is to, you know, want to take care of them.
Yeah, well, I think I'll come back to your example, actually, around the kind of office being moved around, and years ago when they brought in hot desking and people had to move their belongings into lockers, and it was an environmental change, it was a process change, there were technology changes, there was a social and kind of organizational structural change as well. And I think for someone who feels in that vulnerable child state, that can be a lot of change at once. And if it's not handled appropriately, or they're made to feel quite vulnerable, it kind of puts it back on that parent or that adult in the room to make some sensible choices, but to manage their emotions. And yeah, it's definitely been done badly in a lot of places. And perhaps COVID as well was a good example of that, where everyone started working from home. Some people took to it, some people didn't. Some people were already working from home and had their environment kind of shaken up a little bit as well. And I think we've probably all found ourselves in that child state and needed a little bit more support from management or from colleagues to make us feel more comfortable.
I think that's a great observation. Yeah.
And getting back into the pivotal point in all of this is the adult state, because this is the central place that holds the dynamics. And if we can manage to, whether we're dealing with that place of change or feedback or whatever that the trigger point is, if we can recognize it and come back to the adult place, and the adult place is the place of rationality, it's the place of objectivity, where we can see what's going on, we can understand these dynamics, and then we can do something about it. So the adult becomes the all-important anchor for all of this.
That's a really good explanation. I like that. The adult is the anchor in the situation, and that really needs to be the ego state that we're all aiming for. What I'm interested in is, we talked about others moving into the ego states of critical parent or fractious child, but what about us as individuals? Are we guilty as charged, or are we always adults?
We had a great one at home yesterday, in fact, when a cup had been broken in the dishwasher, because some people in our household are not particularly careful when they load the dishwasher. And so I noticed the cup in the kitchen, which was on the side, and I said to my husband, "This cup is broken." And he said, "Get off my back." Immediately.
So he did it.
That's an admission.
It is defensive, isn't it? Before.
And of course, that's a result of an old dance that we have. And we all have these things in close relationships. But what it does illustrate is how the most innocent comment, "this cup is broken," can be taken in and perceived as some kind of criticism, which it probably was in all honesty, but, you know, but it's easy just that, again, it goes to that underlying dynamic and the nuance, which can be really difficult to manage and to spot. Yes.
And maybe also someone's emotional state of that day as well. You know, if he was having a bad day, or if anyone was having a bad day, they would take a nice comment potentially in the wrong way as a bit of a dig. And I think there's probably something in that. People who are more happy and balanced and chilled out on a day are probably less likely to take it as a personal thing.
Absolutely right.
Interesting. I can fess up. I went on a yoga retreat. It was a teacher retreat at an ashram, and one of the service duties that I was assigned to was sorting gravel for 90 minutes in the pouring rain. And I'm afraid I slipped into child mode. I've been told to do this. I don't want to do it. Arms folded. I did do it eventually, but yes, I was very resentful, and actually I'm still resentful to that day, to this day, so I still move into that, stubborn child mode, rebellious child.
The rebellious child, but the other side of child, there are two aspects to child as well, and the other side to rebellious child is the playful child, right? So perhaps an initial transition away from rebellious child to playful child: start chucking the gravel at other people.
Yes, at the person who had assigned that particular task to me. That would have been good. Yeah, I think I might have been asked to leave, actually, had I done that. It's not really Om Shanti, so yeah.
Do you think there was something in around kind of parent, the parent or the adult in the room hadn't explained the logic or the purpose behind that? So as a child, you were thinking, what's the point in doing this? What's the value in doing it? How can I grow if I don't know why I'm sorting this gravel?
You know? Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That's a very valid point. So I'm going to move on now from transactional analysis, because I'm aware that there's another model which is particularly useful in explaining toxic behavior in the workplace, and it's called the drama triangle. So I'm going to hand over to our expert, Mandy. It would be great if you could take a couple of minutes to explain to us exactly what the drama triangle is.
Sure. So this will be a very quick overview. And drama triangle was developed by Stephen Cartman from the initial work around transactional analysis. And the reason that he developed this work was so that it helps us to see more clearly some of these hidden dynamics. So imagine a triangle, and our drama triangle has got three positions on it, all of which hold relationship to each other. Now, when I'm about to, the three positions are not positions that we are inherently and naturally in one place, but we move around all three of these positions in different circumstances with different dynamics. So we're not one thing. So the three positions, let's start with the victim. Victim is number one. This is the adapted child. This is the rebellious child position. So the victim is, life is happening to me. I'm being done to. Poor me. It's not my fault. I am powerless. It's very much a position of powerlessness. People feel victimized, people feel discounted. But actually, in terms of behaviors, they are also discounting their own ability to act. So the victim puts themselves very much in a position of helplessness when they can only react to the world around them. So that's position number one. Position number two is the rescuer. Now, a rescuer is somebody that loves the victim. So the rescuer is coming in, charging in like the hero. I must save others from harm. It's up to me to do good. If I do good, I will be in some way worthy. I will be a good human for doing this. the rescuer is an interesting one because it sounds as if it's a good thing, but actually it's just as dysfunctional as the others. These three positions are all dysfunctional because the rescuer is discounting the ability of other people to help themselves and therefore can step in and overstep, and in doing so can disempower people. So that's position number two. Position number three is the persecutor. This is the bad guy, the villain of the piece. And the persecutor's main thought is to win, to get their own way. So their inner narrative is, I know best. You must do as I say because I know best. So they tend very much to be the blamer, the pointy finger, the self-righteous place. Trying to force people into particular courses of action. So they dominate, they control, and they discount the feelings of others in trying to get what they want. So, as I said before, we're not one thing. We can often just move around. A really simple example, and I'm sure you've got your own examples. We'll talk these through in a minute. But a simple example might be the manager says to Simon, Simon, this report's got the wrong information in it. So he's now in the persecutor position. Simon flips into victim. But sales isn't very helpful. Sales didn't give me the right information. So manager is saying, why didn't you push back? Why didn't you take accountability? Why didn't you check the information that you were given? So Simon then goes, but they don't listen, still in victim. Anyway, it's not my job and I'm working overtime and the kids are sick. At which point the manager flips into the rescuer. Oh, that sounds pretty awful. I didn't know your kids were sick. I'll talk to the sales director and see what I can do. Flip back to Simon, and Simon's going, well, yeah, because he needs to get rid of Ali. She's absolutely useless. So now Simon, as the original victim, has become the persecutor. And that dynamic can flip so quickly in 30 seconds or over the course of a conversation. So it's worth looking out for. So I'm wondering what you guys have seen in your work and troubles.
Yes, of a drama triangle. Well, it definitely goes back. I think the team that were being asked to move their desks. Well, they weren't being asked; they were told their desks were being moved. I don't know if they were consulted in any way beforehand. I suspect not. Moved straight into victim mode, and the manager, I can see, became the rescuer. And the chief executive who'd ordered this change to take place was absolutely seen as the persecutor in that drama triangle. I mean, there are so many others. I'm, you know, going through my career, but Jo, have you had experience of this? Is there anything that jumps out at you?
Definitely. Yeah. So I remember being in a role previously where I would say I was probably the rescuer type role because I was the only person who was doing a service design role and I had people to try and coach into that role. But the problem was that I didn't have any kind of critical challenge at the time. So I was doing what I thought was right. It may not necessarily have been the right thing to do at the time, but without that challenger role, you feel kind of lost yourself and you almost fall back into that, I suppose, the victim state because you yourself don't have any challenge or support to keep you true and growing yourself as the rescuer, and then you yourself become a challenger because you think, well, I don't have any support here. I'm fed up. I'm going to challenge this to senior management. And you end up going across the whole triangle yourself because there's a gap in that triangle. So I've definitely seen that in previous roles.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah. And I think my long experience as a people manager, my natural instinct would be to move into the rescuer role. I can sort that out for you. Don't worry. And then what happens is you end up working 18 hours a day because you're not empowering your team. And there's also a flip side for them in that they don't develop their skills, they don't grow, they start to feel disengaged. And I think I wish I'd learned about the drama triangle much earlier on, 30 years ago, it would have helped me in so many different situations, I think.
You see that a lot in organisations, the manager stepping in to rescue. And I think many of us who have managed would automatically identify with that place and with your response there, Philippa. But the other thing to remember is when you do step in to rescue, not only do you disempower people by taking away the option of them taking action, but also you take that burden on yourself. And if you are working 18-hour days, what happens very quickly is you then become resentful and you become a victim. But then there's a negative energy that's just being perpetuated in the dynamic constantly.
Like a vortex, isn't it, of negative energy?
Yeah.
Sorry, go on, Jo. Yeah.
No, it leads to burnout as well. Certainly in the service design space, people are taking on so much because there aren't enough of those particular roles or people in the profession that they're getting burnt out, they're leaving, that creates a gap, and then it shuffles everything around again. So it's, yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, is where you're the only one with a certain skill set or one of a small team. Yeah, the pressure is absolutely there. So we understand what the drama triangle is, and thank you, Mandy, for that really excellent explanation. So I think we can know now how to recognize when we're in a drama triangle, but how do we get out of one? Do you have any tips?
Indeed, yeah. There's an alternative model. I'm not going to give you too many models, but there's something called the empowerment dynamic, which basically sits alongside the drama triangle. And the key thing here with the empowerment dynamic is to remember you can't actually change anybody else's position. So I can't change a persecutor into a victim or a rescuer, right? Only they can do that. So in order to get out of the drama triangle, we have to, first of all, become self-aware. We have to recognize the dynamic, to see what's going on, to look at the patterns of behavior, and then take action ourselves so that we can then shift the dynamic. So if we begin to shift our behavior, that will hopefully create a different pattern. So if you are somebody who naturally gravitates towards the victim, what the victim is doing is being helpless. So the way out for the victim is to choose, is to recognize their helplessness and to say to themselves, what boundaries do I need to set here? I need to choose to say no. I need to choose not to overwork. So it's very much about looking at those choices that you're making as a victim. Easier said than done. You know, I'm my own boss, and sometimes I'll say to my husband, I'm working so hard, and he goes, yeah, your boss is so mean, isn't she? You know, so we have to choose, we have to take accountability for ourselves and make the choices. It's interesting what you said, Jo, about, you know, people overworking, and quite often people who recognize the choices will end up leaving the organization. They are not able to find another way through. And that has to be okay in some respects, which is a bit controversial, potentially.
A bit controversial, so, yeah. But yeah. It's true.
But victim needs to become the creator of their own path, basically. They need to be accountable for their own life rather than just always waiting for somebody else to come in and rescue them.
So part of getting out of it is really to expand awareness of what the drama triangle is, so that people are aware when they're in one and when they're playing the victim, and then how to get themselves out of it. Sorry, Mandy, you were going to add something.
Yeah, I'll just quickly outline the rescuer and the persecutor and how you get out of those.
So, thank you.
And then we'll throw it back into the pot. So rescuer, we need to let people fail and fall, not always sweep in to be the hero and pick people up. That's the route to true empowerment. We have to be able to let people fail. And that can be quite hard sometimes in organisations, because if the impact of failure is not going to be tolerated, there is a high risk there. There's also a very thin line between being a coaching manager or even being a coach and being a rescuer. So you need to keep a close eye on that. And pulling back from the rescue and the fix wherever you spot it in yourself. Because some people just get very comfortable being a victim. They need to be the victim, and you can't change that. So step away if you think somebody is taking that space. And last but not least, the persecutor. If you think you're moving into that persecution place, your choice there is to turn it into a challenger role so that you're being positive, and that means listening. You have to listen to what others are saying, and then push for continuous improvement. So what will make this better? How are we going to work together? Very much a collaborative challenger. And catch the inner dialogue of blame. Lead with your intention. So these are how you get out of each of those three particular roles. So any thoughts on that?
I mean, Mandy, do you think there's any benefit in a victim witnessing the challenging behaviours of someone else who feels more empowered to learn from that behaviour? Or do you think there's risk with that, that they can become negative?
Well, the dynamics, remember, these are nuances and dynamics, and these dynamics are quite contagious. So I guess there's always a risk there. Have you seen this happen?
Not necessarily, no. I was just thinking it could potentially be to see someone who does feel empowered enough to challenge something, that actually that could help the victim to break out of that state of vulnerability and go, actually, I could challenge that as well. I feel more empowered to say something because I've seen them say something and challenge the management and not be, you know, negatively called up on it and for some action to have happened.
It takes a lot of energy and a lot of positive energy to pull together and to challenge upwards in a positive way. But yeah, it can happen. It can be done. Yeah, being a role model for challenging positively is always good.
It's tough.
I think it's interesting, an experience of toxic workplace cultures where figureheads in the organization, typically at executive level, can be persecutors. That's their default mode. And everybody moves into victim mode. And then you have a middle level of management that is permanently locked into rescuer mode to keep things running.
Yeah.
And that's a kind of dynamic that I think you mentioned, Mandy, that sometimes you have to leave an organization. And I think that that is one scenario where that actually is probably the only tactic. Would you agree?
I think that's a case of last resort. I think in order to get to that point, you need to see the difference between the role dynamic, and you've just described, you know, senior leaders are the persecutors. Well, actually, not all senior leaders are behaving as persecutors or feel like persecutors. But that role is very much perceived as being persecutionary, if that's a word. So separate out, you know, your own personal behaviours from the perceptions of the role, because it's, you know, role perceptions. You can talk about HR is quite often perceived as a persecutor.
Yeah, for sure.
HR, you know, pointy finger at HR. Oh, bloody HR, they've come up with all these rules and regs that we have to do. Finance is quite often cast in that role as well. But it's not about the individuals. It's about role perceptions. So sometimes there's PR that needs to be done by a leadership team as a whole, and can address that PR. You know, we are being perceived as being the persecutors here. What do we need to do as a leadership team then? And a listening exercise that's highly publicised, that's being consistently applied, can be quite useful in that situation.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Thank you for that. And I completely agree about separating out the role from the person. It's just having experienced in occasionally, not that often, but toxic environments, and it does tie into a whole different leadership skill set, which I know you're expert in, Mandy. But I think the role of the role of the manager is an interesting one here. And I'd just like to very quickly share an experience of a drama triangle. This is before I knew the model. I've only become aware of it in the past 3 or 4 years. We had a brainstorming meeting scheduled, so we needed positive energy, creativity, and I knew as soon as people came into the room that something was up. Long faces, folded arms, not with everybody, but with a few members of the team. And it was clear that trying to push ahead with the meeting agenda was not going to work. So I acknowledged the atmosphere in the room, said there's obviously some grievances that need to be aired, and people started talking. So I got a piece of white flip chart paper and created a grumble board, and we got everything out. It was logged. Committed to, right, I will look at these, I'll follow them up after the meeting, but we've got these 2 hours set aside for this. Are we happy to put the grumble board behind us just for the duration of the meeting? And everybody said yes. So I took that sheet of paper and put it at the back of the room physically. So it was behind us, not just metaphorically speaking, and we were able to progress with the meeting. And what I realized now from your explanations is that was actually a drama triangle, a play, but I didn't solve the problem for people. I didn't rescue it, if you know what I mean. I took a step back from it. And is that really what we should all do when we recognize ourselves in a drama triangle?
Yeah, absolutely. You saw it, you instinctively saw it and felt it and did the right thing.
Yeah.
Philippa, you did the BA thing and you turned the problems into opportunities.
Absolutely.
We made it positive.
All that BA training, much earlier on in my career, paid a big eventually. I don't know where that strategy came from. It just instinctively, I must have been drawing on experience and training I'd had in the past, but it just felt like the right thing to do. And in fact, a team member came up to me afterwards and said, well done.
Thank you for the therapy.
That really well.
Because many managers panic at that point and they don't want to hear and they don't want to acknowledge any of those gripes. So the victims just hold it, you know.
But there was no, their brain wouldn't have been engaged in any kind of creative process. So the hours that we were going to invest in it would have been a waste of time. But I must say, I was older, you know, I wasn't just starting out in my career. So I did have some experience under my belt by that time. So I just thought I'd kind of share that.
Really good example. Yeah,
but I think there's lots that we could talk about now, but it's probably time to draw the BA brew to a close. It's been an absolutely fascinating session, and I'd like to thank Mandy for sharing her knowledge and experience, and Joe as well. You've brought some brilliant angles to some of the things that we've been discussing, which I'm sure will be relevant to our audience of change professionals. So hope everyone's got some good hints and tips and pointers to further information. There's lots to explore, and we'll put some links when we publish the BA Brew. But thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye. Goodbye.
Bye.